Hi, this is Trista with the Call to Learn Conference, and I've got Belinda Ballantyne here with me, and we're going to ask her a few questions, and then she's got a really great presentation on science to share with us. So Belinda, tell us about yourself.
So I'm Belinda Ballantyne, and I have four kids. I taught school previous to having kids. I taught first grade, fourth grade, and sixth grade, and I've been homeschooling for 15 years, and I love science. I teach science classes. I teach literature classes. I've been in co-ops, I've been in mom schools, and just classes here and there, wherever I can teach them. I like it.
Why did you start homeschooling when you were a public school teacher?
Because I had a child that I wanted to be with.
Okay, that's good.
And as a school teacher, you can see some of the problems that are in the school system, mm-hmm. and they aren't problems I wanted to put my child through. Mm. So I was like, I can totally do this at home.
Yeah, makes sense.
And it felt good.
Yeah. So where are you from?
I'm from Orem, Utah.
And were you born here?
I was not. I was born in Hawaii, and I lived in Hawaii, and I've lived in Idaho and North Dakota and Utah, and then I've traveled. The only continent I haven't been to is South America and Antarctica.
Wow.
And
that's awesome.
Someday we'll get there.
Well, South America is really close.
Yeah.
Compared to the other ones.
Antarctica seems easier to get to, though.
Oh.
Less passport problems.
That's very true. That's true. Makes sense. Mm. So tell us about your presentation. What are you going to share with us today?
I'm going to talk about how to help young adults enjoy science.
Oh, great.
And teaching young adult science.
Beautiful. And you like science?
I do. I love it. Like is too small of a word.
That's right. All right. Well, let's get started.
All right. My first question that a lot of people have been asking me is, why do we teach science? What's the point of science? So statistically, 1% of all the students that are in science will become scientists. So why do we spend so much money and so much effort into teaching science? And I don't know why everybody else teaches science, but I would like to share with you the reasons why I think we should teach science. So I think science should be taught because the process of being a scientist helps you to make informed decisions. And you do that by having a question that you answer. And when you answer questions, you're coming up with a process. So you might have to explain your question. And then you're going to research your question. And then you're going to justify your answers and then apply the knowledge you had. And that process, used over and over and over again in an academic setting where you're discussing and talking with other people and trying to learn, makes you better at making decisions and then being able to say, this is why I think this is a good decision. And that whole process of being able to make decisions, I feel like makes you a better citizen, because then you know how to make informed decisions when it comes to voting or when it comes to policy, a city policy or a state policy or a country policy. It also helps you to understand why things happen in the world. So I have four children. So we've been through what we call the dropsy stage at my house, where you put your kid in the chair and then they drop the thing and you pick it up and they drop it. And they love this game because children are programmed to understand their world. So they're trying to understand things. So they drop it and you pick it up and they have that power over you because they're gonna watch you pick up what they dropped. They're also learning about gravity. They're learning all these really fun things. So people in general want to know why. The other thing that I think science is good for is then you can take action in your life personally. So anytime you come to a problem, you don't have to accept the problem. You can move forward with it. Also, it improves your problem-solving skills. The more practice you have in solving a problem, the better you become at solving a problem. And that's super important to me, that I want to pass that on to everyone I know, because all of us have problems and we want to become better at solving those problems. Okay, so how do we get started teaching science to our kids? My favorite way is my kids come to me with questions. My kids have lived with me their whole life, so they know that if they ask a question, we're going to talk about it. They just know it's going to happen. So sometimes if you haven't If you haven't had really good experiences in science, then you pose a question. So I'm going to do a couple of experiments that my family has done in the last 2 weeks, because I feel like that's closest to my heart. So we were watching a little boy. His name is Riker, and he was in the high chair, and he was playing the dropsy game. And my kids thought it was hilarious to, like, run and pick it up and run and pick it up. And Riker was laughing, and my children were laughing. And so I said, well, why does he do that? Why is he doing that? So I have these two balls, and I will ask my kids, which one falls faster? Well, my kids know the answer because we've talked about it. But a lot of times people say this big ball will fall faster than my racquetball. So we get out the balls and we show them. We're going to drop them both at the same time. One, two, three. And they fall at the same rate because gravity is pulling on them the same, even if their mass is different. I'm going to pick them up, and I'm going to do it again because I want you to watch the balls, not what I'm saying. So they fall at the exact same time. You can even hear the bounce at the same time. So that brings up a ton of questions about gravity. And we have spent the week before last talking about gravity. So in my bucket here, I have this blue bucket. It has water in it. And we talked about how water falls. Why does water always go down? And it's because of gravity. So we talked about flooding. My kids remembered the news of the flooding, and they saw some of the pictures on the news where the water was going upstream just because there was so much water, it was flowing backwards. And they said, why is that? And so we spent a lot of time talking that gravity will pull the water to the lowest spot. But then once that spot gets full, it floods back up. Now, if I could take you into my bathtub, I'd take you in there and I'd turn on the water and let the water run for a few minutes and then plug it the drain. And then you see the water kind of makes like a little, it kind of goes up and then it comes back. And you've seen that every single time you take a bath. Every time you take a shower and you accidentally step on that plug, you can see that. And that was so cool to see that click for my kids. So we were talking about gravity, and there's things that stop gravity. So the pull of the earth isn't so big that I can't jump. I can jump, and that's me leaving gravity, but then the gravity pulls me back. I could pour this water out, right? Could do that. But I can also go like this, and the water doesn't come out because the centrifugal spinning force pulls the water in, and that's kind of cool. And we use all this kind of information in our everyday life, like when we go to a water park. We live in Orem, Utah, so Seven Peaks is fairly close to us, and that's what makes those slides and those things so fun for my family. So it's kind of exciting. It's really, really exciting. So the other thing we talked about when we started talking about centrifugal force is the center of gravity. And we're all about gravity right now in our family. So this is a person. You can see him better this way. There's a person there. And he's holding this stick. It's all made out of metal. But these two balls put the gravity beneath him so that you can hold them up like this. And my kids saw this at Grandpa's house. So we borrowed it from Grandpa. And we said, we can make one of these. So we made them. So my kids took a cork. They made a cardboard person, hot glued it to the cork with this wire on it, and we can make. So this is the center of gravity right here. So that's what makes this guy stand up. So it's just super fascinating. Where we talked about the center of gravity, and then we took shapes like a book, and we make a sense. So this is the center of gravity. So then you could balance it on your finger, or you can take any shape and make a plumb line through it, and it finds the center of gravity. So then this other project that we decided to make, it's the same thing as this guy, but there's a straw on the bottom of the cork. And they just had hours of fun tying it to a tree and running it down. And they tried different strings. We had yarn, which didn't work very well because of those little tiny frayed pieces of yarn. They would catch on the straw. And we tried kite string, but it also had a little tiny bits of string. So this is fishing wire, and it just zipped. So then they were recording their time on a little notebook, which string worked the fastest. And so then we were able to talk about friction, that the yarn has the most friction and the fishing line has the least friction. So just with one little question, we talked about center of gravity. We talked about centrifugal force and gravity. Just by why does Riker like to throw the toy down? And then we also talked about how Riker is realizing he can interact with people and cause people to do stuff without screaming and crying. You know, like when a baby needs their diaper changed or they're hungry, they'll scream or cry. But he was doing it in a way to interact with someone. So it's a totally different part of science, like the social sciences. But Riker was developing that relationship with people. It's super cool. Okay, I have this other experiment. We're going to save this one till the end. We're going to go on. So how do you teach science? How would you do that? Now, you may be doing it in your family. You may be doing it with just people in your neighborhood. You may, whatever group you have, there's lots of ways in which to encourage science to happen. So posing a question is a good place to start. Another thing is have a discussion. So sit down and talk about things, whether it's in the news, whether it's like what happens in your life, you know, whatever you're doing. If you're cooking, cooking brings up a lot of questions, and science can happen there a lot, and talk about it. And if you don't know the answer, that's okay. The good place to start, in my opinion, is to go to Wikipedia. It is not a reliable source all the time. So it's a good place to go. So let's say your kids ask you about gravity. And let's say you don't know about gravity, or you don't know about centrifugal force or friction. So go to Wikipedia. And the reason I like Wikipedia is because it has a bunch of information and all the terminology that you need to then go find what you want. So like if I didn't know what gravity was, I would type in gravity and look up the Wikipedia information, and it's going to say mass. So then I don't know what mass is, and mass is highlighted in blue. So I click on mass, and then it tells me what mass is. Then I can go back. I'm like, okay, so now I know what mass and gravity are. Mass pulls on another mass. Okay, so I understand that. So now I want to talk to my kids about it. Like, they've had this question, what is gravity? How does gravity work? And I found some words. I'm going to start using mass, greater mass and lesser mass. I'm going to start using those words because that's going to build their discussion ability and help them to increase in their science. It's going to build their vocabulary. It's going to build their confidence. It's going to help them to connect all this stuff they're learning. So now I know, okay, I know I need mass and I know I need gravity. So the next thing I do is I check out YouTube. What cool activities for kids? I always put for kids because then that narrows down my search tremendously. And generally speaking, if it says for kids, it's stuff you're going to find right in your home. And the other really good resource that I really like to help strengthen my discussions and poise questions is the junior nonfiction section of the library, because they have so many books. They're built for kids, but anybody who doesn't know anything about a certain subject, then those are the people that want to read those books, because that's how you get a basic knowledge. So that's how I would have a discussion, is I would use those resources. Another thing that I really like to do is called round robin writing. So if it's just me and my child, I will ask a question. What do you know about, let's say, gravity? What do you know about gravity? And I'll write down everything they know. Who's the person who first discovered it? Well, everybody's known about gravity forever. Clear back in the Egyptian time, before that, like forever. They drop something, it falls to the ground. But do they know that Isaac Newton is the first person who wrote out the laws? They may not. But if they don't, then they might say everyone, and they're right. Because we've known about gravity since we were babies, because we played with it. But Isaac Newton is the first one who came up with these laws about it. So just find out what they know, write it down, and then when you go to the library or you go to the internet, you have some place to go from. Like, you know what they already know, and then you can build on that knowledge. Also, my kids really like doing a mock panel or a discussion, so they get to get all dressed up and they pretend like they're the scientist and they know the information, and then I ask them questions and they answer their questions and they like are all fancy and then they get silly. But it's still so fun because it's a way for them to share what they know, and it helps you as a person who loves children or loves students or loves other people to understand what they know. And that helps you to know how to direct the conversation. It also is a good way to check that they have basic fundamental understanding of the subject that you're talking about. Creating websites, doing a PowerPoint presentation. Dipity is a site. It's a timeline site, but you can also use it for science. Like, when did the different scientific discoveries come about? Okay, so the other thing I like is creating cartoons, giving me a summary of things that you can do, like whatever you've studied. Okay, now what I consider the most important thing about science is a reflection. When you're done talking about it, or when you're done doing an experiment, or when you're done doing something, ask them to think about it. What was the part that's the most confusing? Lots of times we want to know what they learned, and that's really important, but what are they confused about? That to me is super important, because that's the part that I want to follow up the next time I'm offering a science idea. I want to, like, that was confusing. Let's talk about it. You know, what was the most important thing you learned? Because sometimes they're just going to give you the answer they think that you want to hear, but you want to know what's important to them and how to help them to really just push that bubble of knowledge on their body. Just push it out. And then also, how are you going to use this information in your own life? Those are really important reflection questions. And that is before the lesson ends, before you're done talking about it. So if you can tell they're getting tired, you're going to cut it short and ask these questions so that you get it before they're done. And if you're teaching a class, like I teach classes, one thing that I think is super important is, in order for them to leave your class, I call it an exit ticket, they have to either write or tell me what you learned today, what was I surprised about, and what do I understand now. So if they didn't understand something in the past, that's okay. What did they learn today that helps them to understand now? And that's, we want to bring all that knowledge into their life and make it work for them. Does that make sense? Yeah, it makes sense to me. Hopefully it makes sense to you. Okay, so I want to show you this other experiment. It's very noisy. So this here is a leaf blower. You can use a blow dryer. It just doesn't have the same effect. I'm going to ask Tresta if she would be willing to help me. So my family, like not this past week, but the week before the last week, wanted to know what made airplanes fly. We were making paper airplanes during general conference. That was something we were trying to keep us entertained with, and because we have young children. So we were trying to make these paper airplanes, and they kind of were bombing. They weren't working. They were like nosedive planes. And so my kids said, well, what makes them fly? So we talked about birds and what made birds fly. So between the Saturday conference, we went out and looked at some birds. And we'd been to the Bean Museum at BYU before, and they have some stuffed birds. And we were talking about how the top part of the wing goes like this, and the bottom part of the wing goes like this. And we talked about how the air goes slower on the top than it does on the bottom, and that creates the lift that the birds need. So then they could tweak their paper airplanes. So let me just show you. I wasn't planning on showing you this, but it's pretty cool. So I'm just going to make a really simple paper airplane. You know, fold it like a hot dog. Make the little triangle on top. Fold it in half. Like, we're talking, this is like the simplest airplane ever. So, these are our nosedive models. You throw them, they kind of nosedive. Yeah. Okay. Right? They just nosedive. So, my kids decided that if they folded this little part up here, so the air is going to hit this and then have to go over it, which it doesn't have to do on the bottom. So they were assuming, this is how they applied their knowledge of what we talked about. We didn't actually go to the Bean Museum and look at birds. We just talked about what we had seen before. And then we went in our backyard, and there's some birds in our backyard, so we could see that. So then they tried flying them that way. And it worked for them. It's not working for me. But we'll try and do, they do this. So my kids make this paper airplane, where you just fold down that point, just so you know. Okay. I hope it shows up in the camera. Let me try one more time, because it worked for them. I don't know, not good paper paint fire. But it worked for them. They were tweaking the paper, making it so that it was curved on the top. So this experiment is what I was doing to show them. So if you can hold this like sure. this. Okay. Yeah. So this is my handy dandy leaf blower. And I'm going to turn it on. It's fairly loud. Okay. And I'm going to ask you to maybe like hold it like that.
Okay.
Hopefully it shows up in the camera. Okay. So this is going to be, this is the wind. I'm going to turn it on. It's going to blow wind over the top of this. What you're interested in is this part right here. Pretty cool. My kids think it's the funnest thing ever. So that shows. So that's how much toilet paper is left, and we only did it for like 2 seconds. Just to show you that science can be fun, and they love this. They ask for this a lot because it's so exciting to see the toilet paper do that.
So what if you have done it on the bottom? It wouldn't have gone.
Then
anywhere,
it just
right?
It does go somewhere. Do you want to try it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So here you go. You hold that again. So this is going to be interesting because see your hand is a little bit in the way.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to try and put it underneath right here if that's okay.
Yep.
So you kind of have to hold this other side because otherwise it rolls off the. Okay. So here we go. Ready? Guess what? We're going to break it off because
okay.
That's the drag.
Right.
Right? Okay. So let's try this again. You ready?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So did you see it just spun
uh-huh.
backwards?
Yeah.
And like the toilet paper is like all beat up now. Like it's like all separated.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So because it's just spinning backwards. Mm-hmm. Now, if you have a little tail, every time it spins, it will get just a little bit longer and a little bit
okay.
longer. And then that adds more drag.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Cool. Okay.
Interesting.
So I really, really believe that we should teach science because we want them to ask questions. We want them to analyze and discuss. So the other thing that we talked about at the beginning was that it helps them to make decisions because they can explain things. And that's why it's so, so important that they talk about their science. So a lot of times we want to do these experiments because they're so, so fun. And like making this, I mean, this takes like 15, 20 minutes just to make this little device. And then they play with it for 15 or 20 minutes, which we really want them to do because we want them to explore. Like that's super, super important for them to have the chance to explore and to try things out because it will help them. But if we stop there, like, okay, science is over, and we haven't discussed what they've learned or how they're going to apply it, it then becomes just an activity. And really, we want them to be able to explain it. So a lot of times, I ask my kids to write it, or they tell me and I write it down, and then I read it back to them. This is what you were saying. And so many times, they're like, Mom, that's not what I meant. I'm like, oh, okay, that's okay. Tell me what you meant. And then they can work on really explaining what they're thinking. It's a powerful tool. If you can say what you're thinking to the people around you, then you can help them to understand where you're coming from. And that becomes a powerful tool. The other thing is when we made our little guy and put him on the string, we had him on yarn, we had him on, you know, kite string, we had him on crochet string, embroidery thread, and fishing string. When you teach them to make a chart or a graph, and then they can compare it, it's using so many senses, so many parts of their life are coming into this activity. And then when you have them write about it, so they've made this graph, and they can see that the yarn is the slowest. You've introduced a new word, friction. So that's like a whole nother science topic. But when you do stuff like that, I look at it as scaffolding. And when I think of scaffolding, I think of construction workers working on a building, fixing a building or restoring something. And they build. Sometimes they might build just one ladder, but that doesn't give them a lot of work. They often will cover the whole side with ladders and boards, and the men are going back and forth and women are working up and down, and it's really cool. And that's what we want to have happen in our mind. So when someone says friction, this could come to mind, or like tires can come to mind, or biking, or snowmobiling, or skiing, or snowboarding. Like, you're going to just use it in so many ways that they'll have just a really thick scaffolding and not just one activity. So, but because you've given them the vocabulary, when you're driving down the road and it's icy in a couple of weeks, it might get icy, you'll say, oh, we don't have as much friction right now. And they'll know what that means because they'll think of that string. And then they'll have a new thing in their heart and mind. Oh, tires have friction. Or then you play that game where you slide around in socks and shock each other. And that's friction. And you start just building these words and these experiences for you, for those people around you and yourself, in which the world now makes more and more sense. And when the world makes sense, we feel at peace. And we also feel the awe of God. That it's so amazing, this world that we live in, and that we get to discover it. I just love that.